Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 13th of March, and I'm recording at 9:40 p.m., and that's Greenwich Mean Time here in London. Now, this being Friday, this is the big picture long-term outlook for the various asset classes. But first, my apologies for not being able to provide any written copy. Yesterday, I had it all written, and I was starting to format it for the site when I lost suddenly lost all data input. This happens very occasionally, and is inevitably upsetting, and a fiddly process to sort out, which I was unable to do really until about noon today. So. As a consequence of that, I couldn't produce the copy, but it will be posted here today along with what else that I have also worked on. Now, I think also we should have a quick look at what's going on here overall in the very short term, and you will have certainly noticed that volatility has picked up a bit. But all the leading markets are still reasonably in form. You will have also seen some quite dramatic volatility in the currency markets compared to what we normally get. And that U.S. dollar index in here today, that's closed above the $100 level. And that's also seen the euro slide below the 105 down to 104.96. Now, sterling, George Osborne, the Chancellor, since the UK does most of its trade with Europe, can't sit by quietly or stand by quietly while the euro is plunging, and so he's letting sterling slip in here, and or people are doing it for him, traders are doing it for him, and sterling's down to 1.4744 against the greenback. But this is really a case of greenback strength. A few currencies are holding up reasonably well against this, including the Indian rupee still, although it has eased a little bit overall. Now, the dollar move, though, I think is, first, it's not surprising that the dollar has firmed. Owen and I had been talking about that for a long time. During last year, but what is surprising is the extent of the actual move, because the Fed has, and the fact that the Fed has, to date, apparently done nothing about it. It would be fascinating to be a fly on the wall in the next Fed meeting to see what they're actually saying about this. We'll get a better indication of what they're saying when we can see what the charts are actually doing. But we've still got a momentum move here on the upside. And it's overextended, but it's been overextended for a while. So the momentum is still in play. And people are just, I think systems, trading systems, are just doing this. It still shows that demand is in charge, so they gun it further. But it is very overextended, and it is causing problems for U.S. exporters, as we hear. Some companies inevitably cope with it better than others, as Apple said, I believe, today. It is a problem, and the U.S. is underperforming on quite a bit of data. But let's see what the stock market data is actually showing, and I'll just run through some of these very, very quickly. For instance, after today's moderate decline in on Wall Street, all under 1%, with losses partially recovered. But nevertheless, the Dow is in the red, only slightly. So is the S&P. Only slightly. NASDAQ Composites doing better, 2.87% to the upside. The commodity producers, of course, have appalling figures. These are all in going to be in U.S. dollars, but Brazil, for instance, is down almost 21% here on the year. On the year. But looking at Europe, we know how weak the euro has actually been. But Germany up 5.29% on the year in U.S. dollars, and the UK is down a little bit, 2.81%, and Spain is down almost 7%. But most of the other European markets are showing moderate gains, including Italy up 3.64%. We see what's happened. Where the QE is in play, we have seen weak currencies, particularly with the euro, and we have seen firm stock markets. And Japan, the classic example here, the Nikkei 225 up 8.79%, again in US dollars. Australia, Hong Kong also higher. And if I just look at a few more of these for you, China also back in the red. The Shanghai Composite up 3.36%. See, most indices are outperforming the U.S. Looks like the Nikkei. We know it's Shenzhen Composite. It's a small index, but that's up almost 20%. On the year to date. And again, looking at let's see, India, which is in a reaction consolidation phase here overall, having seen the Sensex index roar up to the 30,000 level, bit of a round of phobia level there, isn't it? And then back off and then retest it and fail to break through. Now a little bit oversold in the short term, but still very much ranging. If it comes lower, I'll get interested again. But it's eroded certainly India's gains. The Sensex index is up 3.81% now, but remember it was up, I think, up almost 10% last month. And the Nifty, that's the CNX Nifty, that's the broader index, up 4.57% in India. Okay, Thailand also showing gains on the year, outperforming Wall Street. Well, where do we actually go from here? We've obviously got nervous markets. A lot of bearish forecasts are coming out, and some of them are actually quite hysterically bearish. I really wonder what's well, I'll leave it to your imagination in terms of what's actually going on there. But we also know that a lot of people have been underinvested or out of the market for a long time. And some of the short side players too have not performed all that well. They've underperformed the indices. Long only funds have underperformed given the persistent strength of the bull market. Well, choppy strength now of the bull market. So, a point I just would repeat on that is that if investors are heavily long, let alone leveraged, you get a lot of extremely optimistic forecasts. On the other hand, if they're underinvested or if they're running shorts, then they're going to be a little bit more pessimistic because they want the market to come back where they can add to positions. That's, I think, a common sense assessment because they'd be schizophrenic if they were bearish and fully invested, or or out of the market and bullish. Okay. People fretting about the QE, and I've said previously in these broadcasts that, it'll be at least a decade more before people are actually able to give a comprehensive assessment of what QE has done, not only in the period that we're living in here right now, we know that, but how it affects long-term events, if at all. And so we will see. But what we do know, what we have seen very, very clearly, is that QE is certainly manna from heaven for longside investors. And we've had terrific bull markets. We've had the best bull markets where we've seen the QE. And right now, of course, very much in form, in fashion, Europe and also Japan benefiting from this QE. So there are certainly still opportunities in play in these markets. At Wall Street, which so many people are worrying about, and its economic data has been below expectations in recent weeks or even recent months. And it's in a little corrective phase here right now, but it is still to the left of the rising 200-day moving averages. In other words, all the upward trends are still intact, and we don't have any lower lows except for the utilities index, but that's just one index. I don't think that it's. I had a look back in 2007, that 2007-8 period, and it was not a leader. I'm not worrying about the utilities index here right now. And we would need to see some of the rising lows broken by the other indices to indicate a more significant correction on Wall Street. That's quite possible. We obviously are going to get the 10% plus correction or 20% correction at some stage. That could easily happen here this year. But the overall background does not justify some of the horrendous forecasts that we actually hear, horrendously bearish, I mean, forecasts that we actually hear. Interest rates are still very low, and that's a favorable environment overall. Yes, debt levels are going up, and that is a concern. There are lots of concerns, there always are. But the big key factor here, the most important one of all, is the fact that monetary policy is still really quite favorable overall. And a quarter point or even a half point in interest rate hikes from the Fed, if that's what we get later this year, and I don't think that's guaranteed, although the Fed's certainly under pressure to raise rates somewhat, but frankly, the strong dollar is more than equivalent to a quarter point rate hike. The reason they're under pressure, I think, is because of that upcoming election next year, presidential election. So the bottom line, though, is that global interest rates, for the most part, remain quite low, very low in a number of instances. And monetary policy still remains accommodative, and invested in stock markets are giving good returns. So I can live with the volatility. I don't want to get shaken out of what I consider to be some very good positions in my portfolio, if we face a 10% correction. Okay. Looking further ahead for these stock markets, I would certainly stay with those from both a trading and investment stance that are receiving the QE, and I think that's going to continue for certainly the rest of this year and well into next year. We already know that for both Japan and also the European Union. And we aren't going to see any steep increases in interest rates anytime soon, I feel. The concerns about deflation are understandable, but I think largely mistaken, because I feel, and I've been saying for some time, that a great deal of those deflationary pressures are actually caused by technology, and it's actually positive deflation, being able to produce more and sell more at less costs. And we can thank technology for that more than anything else. We are, I think, clearly in an accelerating rate of technological innovation. That's hugely bullish, particularly for corporations, particularly for the autonomies, those big multinational corporations that that we like so much, subject to valuations and overall chart performance. In other words, we don't want them to get too far ahead of themselves. So I see far more positives for stock markets. We don't have inflationary pressures. We don't have long-dated government bonds soaring higher, far from it. And this is a favorable background still for equities. Again, that doesn't mean that you can't see a 10, 20, or even a 30% correction, although I'd be surprised to see the latter anytime soon. So I expect mostly a choppy upward bias, maybe a little worse than that during the mid part of the year, which will, I would say, anything from May on into through or on through October, that historically performs a little less well. But we will see. I'm still long. I haven't reduced my portfolio at all. I'm very glad that I do remain long. India taking a breather. It's a global beauty contest out there, and India, after the surging up to that 30,000 level on the Sensex, a bit overextended, bit expensive, running a little bit ahead of the growth, which is improving and considerable, that India is seeing, but so pausing and consolidating, that's normal action overall. And China, I think, looks extremely attractive, and people are generally underinvested in China, is my impression overall. So, looking on a longer term basis, I think those well-known factors, I'll mention them just very briefly in here, but the most important one by far, which I think is extremely bullish and capable of supporting a secular bull market, as in a very long-term bull market for another couple of decades or so, the accelerated rate of technological innovation. And what an exciting time we live in, because of course this is unprecedented, and it is extremely bullish. I emphasize particularly bullish for the big corporations, but we all benefit from it in our daily lives. And then we have the lower energy costs, and that is extremely favorable overall. And I think these will remain or be here to stay. Right now, today, we've seen that U.S. crude come right down, and I would just pick that up. It's below 45. It's closed tonight at $44.84. So it's right on its January lows. The Brent crude is firmer. It's at 54.60, down almost $2.50 in here today. And I would not be at all surprised to see it test its lows and possibly move a little lower still. And you know the reason for that, of course. There's a lot of oil sloshing around the globe. And yes, eventually we will see some reduction in supply actually occurring. And yes, we will see demand pick up a little bit more when economies are somewhat stronger. But I don't think that we're going to get back up over that $100 level. And I think really oil would do well to get back up into the $60-$70 range. Well, if it's Brent, we'd probably say the $70 to $80 range. I think that would be pretty much the most that we're likely to see on the upside at best. So that's favorable, I think, overall for global GDP growth and the secular bull market. That was one of the key planks. And of course, technology is the main factor contributing to that because it's enabled all the vastly more effective drilling to take place, not least the shale oil. And it has also led, enabled the renewables to gradually improve and or rapidly improve in terms of their efficiency. Solar power, that's the big one in my opinion. And it's becoming ever more competitive. So that's a very favorable factor. We still have the growing middle class populations led by now by the developing world. We still have an overall global population increase. We still have a system that is overwhelmingly based on capitalism. And whether democratic or command capitalism. And we did not certainly did not have that in the last secular bull market in equities, as I've pointed out on a number of occasions, and you older investors will recall. So there are a lot of very bullish factors here, I believe. And that doesn't mean if I've said I think we could see a secular bull market going well into the next two decades. And that doesn't mean that we won't see some what I would describe as cyclical bear markets. But I think those would be moderate. Those would not be big, horrific crashes such as we saw in 2000 and such as we saw particularly in 2008. I think bear markets of that magnitude, and I've said this really since that 2008 low, I have said they are going to be much rarer in the future. The biggest risk of other than some sort of wild card shock that we can't envisage today, the biggest risk is when we have global economies all synchronized in a period of GDP growth and overheating. Well, I'm not holding my breath for that. It will happen again, of course, but not any time over the next few years. Okay, what about these commodity markets? Well, as far as the agricultural commodities are concerned, we know that's really a matter of supply. That's the key variable. And the weather gods have been mostly favorable. And long may that remain the case. That's helps to obviously to keep inflation pressures down. And it also is particularly beneficial for the poorer economies. So hopefully that will continue, but I don't know whether that will be the case or not. But right now, food prices are really quite benign. And in terms of industrial, well, we've talked about oil, or I've talked about oil, but in I don't think we're going to get any big move to the upside anytime soon. And in terms of industrial metals, the producers are benefiting from the technology as much as a lot of other big multinational companies. So their costs are lower, they're drilling far more, and they're able to drill and extract far more efficiently, so they can produce more. And with slow GDP growth, and also some substitution, we're seeing metal prices, industrial metal prices, remain quite depressed overall. And veteran subscribers will recall that a dramatic catch-up move in the resources sectors is one of the key signs of the very ending stage of an overall bull market cycle. Well, we certainly haven't got anything like that today. And the reason why it has been such a good indicator of a very late stage of overall bull market cycle in decades past is because when global GDP growth really is stronger and central banks are getting worried about overheating, the demand for those metals is really quite strong. And also when in bull markets are overextended, overall valuations will be high for most other sectors, and that will make resources stocks look increasingly cheap. And so they get these very powerful late runs. Well, again, to repeat the key point, we haven't seen anything like that, and I'm not holding my breath in terms of a sudden big catch-up move by those resources stocks, but they're very cheap. The ones you have to look at, though, if you're interested in that sector at all, I think is the leaders, the big ones that have the strong balance sheets and can still pay their dividends, which I'm talking about the BHPs and the Rios at the top of the list. Here, in full disclosure, I have those in my portfolio. Yields of nearly 6% or more. Those reward you for your patience here, and I think there's a good chance that they can get through the cycle without having to pare those dividends back. But we will see. So, moving on to what about these government bonds? Overall, investors have done extremely well in that sector for what, 3.5 decades. It's not a sector that I participate in all that much. A lot of my listeners this evening will know a good deal more about the overall bond markets than I do. But what I do know, and you know, is that these record low yields, certainly in the developed countries, these are only sustainable if we get no GDP growth and no real recovery. And some people are forecasting that. I think they're wrong on that. I think this will bumble along for a little while longer. This is what happens following big credit crisis recessions. But we're at the stage now where we're starting to see the improvements in GDP activity sporadically coming into a number of economies. We're seeing it in a little bit of it in Europe. We've been seeing it in the UK for a while. We've seen it in the US for a while, but it sputters because that strong dollar that I was talking about earlier. And we're seeing it in India. And I actually think China will surprise on the upside, maybe not before next year, though. So that overall, I feel is a risky. It's a medium to longer term risk in these bond markets. Again, technology will help to keep those inflationary pressures in check and help to keep yields lower for longer. QE obviously helps to keep yields lower for longer, and there's plenty of QE still going on. But the long-term outlook, I think, will be for profit erosion. And so I'd rather have higher yielding attractive equities. And yes, they'll be more volatile, but so what? You buy the if you're worried about the volatility, you buy when they're if they fall 10 or 20% and sell if they become temporarily if they become overextended relative to their MAs. Okay, and in terms of currencies, well, I've already talked about the US dollar. The big question is, what's the Fed going to do? And I think that they will probably step in at some stage, but until they tell us, we or well, I'd like to be a fly on the wall, as I said in their meetings. But I think that the move to the upside that we've seen in the dollar is sufficiently overextended now that it could very easily lead to a very a lengthy, as in multi-month, partial pullback and consolidation of those gains. Do I think the dollar will be even stronger 5, 6 years from now? 4, 5, 6 years from now? Yes. I do, because I think the U.S. economy will do well overall, not least because it is the leader in many technologies. But after a big move to the upside, such as we've seen for the dollar, and the actual dollar index, again, that's against primarily against European currencies, that's up over 25% from since July of last year. So that's quite a move, even if it is from a what was a depressed level. So I think we've seen. I think we're in the overextension phase in the. In the short term, it can get a little more overextended, but then I look for that multi-month consolidation. The euro, it's still weak. It still has momentum. People are still short the euro. They know that QE is not going to push the euro up. But I do feel that we're now entering the overshoot territory. It can go on overshooting to the downside, but the thing about overshoots is that they are not sustained. So I would be less worried about the euro, particularly if you're buying some of the attractive European autonomies in this environment. Not a bad idea in my opinion. I've done some of that myself, as you probably know. So my guess is that we'll see the euro move somewhat lower, but I've already said it here. This is we're now into the becoming overextended territory, and. The resources producers, well, they're going to certainly remain with weak currencies, at least until we see a major recovery in those resources prices, and that's not going to happen over the short to medium term, in my opinion. It will happen over the longer term, but that will, of course, be when global GDP growth is synchronized and growing far more strongly than we see here today. And I think that oh, precious metals, precious metals. Well, I would describe precious metals as being fair value, but they are not competitive in here at this time, and they're not in fashion in here at this time. So I know one very successful investor who says, well, he's just doing a little bit of nibbling, not in futures, but actually picking up the metal on the big sell-offs, and he'll continue to do that. But he's not putting a massive amount in, a very wealthy investor, but to keep it a small proportion of his overall portfolio. I think that makes sense. And these are hard money, gold and silver in particular, and they will retain their value over time. They're a reasonable diversification. But to say, right, we should go in and pile into gold and have it as a major portion of our investment portfolio at this stage, I can't see it. I think it's not justified. There are too many opportunities in these stock markets. And in other markets. Also, some of the collectible sectors are staging a comeback, which is interesting, and that's another sign that global economic confidence is improving somewhat. And on that note, I will say thank you very much for your interest. Have a fantastic weekend. All the very best.